It's 7-1 Hand, brought to you by Good Game St. James. Welcome, listener, to the small world that is 7-1 Hand. I know what you're thinking. We can't all fit in there.
No.
But instead of plagiarizing dialogue from Gangbang Apocalypse 5, why can't we just take a leaf from their book, Lube Up, and try? You'll only need 2 to 5 players, an affection for a grand dame, and 40 minutes of sexy time. Still sounds dirty, doesn't it? Well, Lilliputian listener, crazy as it sounds, small world's board game. Got it in before the music finished.
Nice one.
Hey.
Also, you nailed "well, Lilliputian listener,"
well,
which
Lilliputian
I can
listener.
Barely say
blah, blah,
now.
Blah, blah, blah.
Well, Lilliputian listener.
That's what happens, you know, when in rehearsals.
Yeah.
You know, close hours spent in rehearsals, yeah. So I got it bang on. And, it paid off.
Yeah. That was good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, high five, coach. Thank you. First published in 2009, Small World is a game designed by Philippe Cailletz, a Belgian mathematician madman. The madman bit may be here just to create intrigue in what would otherwise be a very dry introduction. He's more accurately being described a designer of German-style board games.
That's not that exciting.
Okay. His two most popular games are Evo and Vinci. He also... check this out. He also invented Space Blast, which is a small space battle game.
Small Space Blast.
Small World, a fantasy-themed board game, is based upon a remake of his most popular game, which was Vinci. But what does it all mean to gamers? To be small-minded, yet worldly, with me today, I have the incy-wincy Aaron Graham.
That's unfortunately not the first time I've been called that.
Yeah, just ground we don't want to recover. And Micro Matt McHale.
It just conjures up images of those micro machines you used to get. I collected those as a kid. Yeah.
Micro machines, Micro Matt McHale.
That's right. Nice of you to join us this week, Matt.
This week. Oh!
I feel a little bit of a, yeah.
Gentlemen, welcome to the very tiny, uncivilized world of 7-1 Hand.
It's pretty. Small. We say it's small and uncivilized, but the...
The Austin Mengler Gallery.
We are actually recording this from the brand new...
Austin Mengler Gallery Stadium.
Stadium.
Yeah.
From a gallery that just gives a whole new overtone, doesn't it, of what we actually do here.
Yeah, I know, really. Yeah. People are just imagining wide expanse rooms, white walls, everything's very...
High ceilings. Pristine.
We probably mop the floor
chandeliers.
Every now and then.
I loved how many...
chandeliers.
Seven-line hand, people think of chandeliers.
Oh,
we've got
definitely.
Loads of those.
I hear that guitar, that rocking guitar intro, and I think chandelier.
Yeah.
Bottles of Moe. That's what it's
about. Yeah, next
up. Pinot Noir.
Pinot. Oh, right.
Yeah, you see.
You're a fine wine beverage consumer, aren't you?
Pinot Noir.
You know your stuff. Yeah, anyway, so we're here to discuss Philippe Cailletz. Philippe. Small World.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a game that I've played. Seeing that it came out in 2009, I must have played it just about from the word go, because I thought it was an old game, and I just bumped into it. But
me too. Like, I remember buying it for my friend's birthday a few years ago, and I was like, this game's been out for ages. I played it when I was at uni. I played it with some other people at another thing that they owned it. I thought it was a really, really good board game to get for my friend to start his collection.
Yeah.
But it just seems like one of those ones that's been around for ages.
Well, there's probably a good reason for that when you consider that it's a re-imaging of Vinci.
A game that we knew nothing about.
Yeah. We didn't
exactly
know it
right.
existed before today.
Matt's giving me that look like, I knew about Vinci.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up, man. No, uncivilized fool. Sorry, have you got something to say about Vinci?
Other than his namesake Leonardo.
He gives me the harsh slapdown look, but then knows nothing.
No.
Beautiful. Now, guys, today I was thinking, let's spray paint the whole small world package in grey.
Yep.
We'll spray half of the tiles red and put swastikas on them, and the other half military green.
Sure.
The map, we'll just put map down of Europe. That's pretty much the same game, isn't it? So that's a boring version of Small World is. You take that as the stock game,
yeah, sure.
And then you amplify everything and make it more interesting.
Are you talking about literally just like
Small World
moving like Nazis against.
Yeah, you know when you're watching, you know when you're watching like a montage from one of those movies, and like the Nazis are invading, and they'll have one of them long sticks and they'll push things across the table.
I completely understand what you mean now. Yeah, okay. So
the battle map,
something like that.
Yeah. Yes. Like and they do it in Game of Thrones as well. They've got ornately carved like lions to represent the Lannisters, and then wolves, and then they like push them down dramatically when they lose an army. Or something.
Exactly.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
But with more fancy artwork.
Yeah. But there's way more to it, isn't there?
There's a little bit more to it.
Should we do a podcast on it?
I'd say there's more to Small World than World War II.
Okay, yeah.
Just as a by and large statement.
Oh, well, let's jump into it then.
Whole civilizations,
perhaps. Let's see what Matt has to say about this one.
David, you've already said designed by Philippe
Kietz.
Make sure you're putting your best French accent.
Belgian.
That's going to get a bit slapping from the Belgian and French community.
French-Belgian.
I'm in trouble. All right. his notable games were Vinci, Evo, and there was another one that was missed.
Battle!
Another
Space
one?
Space Blast.
Olympos.
Space Blast.
Olympos.
Olympos is a newer game.
Like, how new?
2011.
I did my research, I only do 2010 backwards. Mm-hmm.
So that's relevant.
Yeah. Anything else is just... Obviously,
in the modern era, I just take it that our educated listener already knows. They're just going, Philippe Kietz.
Olympos.
He's known
Olympos
for
is
Olympos.
One of my favourites. Yeah. I better not talk about Olympos.
I wonder what else he's done. I better listen to Seven Land Hand and find out.
See, this is where you come to for all your information. Re-implemented Vinci from 1999, which, Aaron, I'm sure...
That was last century.
You wouldn't be able to conceive of anything prior to...
He still can't conceive anything. Swift kick in the knackers of his girlfriend came in several months ago.
2009, I remember that one. Yeah. 1999, I wasn't even in this country.
Did you conceive of anything in 1999?
I conceived one or two things.
Yeah,
I was
a few children.
Prolific. Is that the word? Sure.
Anyway, moving right along from that uncomfortable line of conversation.
I was young, that's a joke.
Yeah. You were young, that's right. Yeah. So Vinci, a game of building civilizations and then actually bringing them down, reaching the pinnacle, and then they crash down around you, and then you raise up a new civilization to take on. So what... Small World has re-implemented that with a fantasy theme and a very humorous sort of overtone.
Yeah, like a Munchkin-y kind of...
Exactly.
Looking at fantasy through the humorous lens rather than the serious Lord of the Rings lens. Yeah.
Munchkin is actually what I thought of when I was looking at it.
Yeah.
The really skeletons are wide-eyed and hopeful rather than frowny and fangs.
Yeah.
And the halflings' bellies are round with opportunity.
As opposed to being like covered with like dirt and blood from trekking through Mordor.
Yeah. Their fists are full of cheese and beer.
This game, to give you an idea, this game's done so well that they've actually developed an iOS version of it and they re-implemented it as Small World 2. But
that's what
Small
World
2 is. So it's very, very popular game.
Mm-hmm. But it's the same game.
It's the same game.
Oh.
Yeah. What's missing is all the expansions and whatnot, but,
I'm sure they'll charge you for that sometime in
the future. And that tactile reassurance that we as board gamers search for. You can take it home and hug it.
Well, when we talked about the components, we'll get into that tactile thing. Yeah. So the premise of the game is as players are controlling one of several unique race combinations at the height of their
civilizations.
Yeah.
It's a civilization game.
It is. Yeah. As players expand their empires across the board, they're gradually moving toward becoming a civilization in decline.
Can you be an uncivilized civilization? You can't you?
Oh, of course, you'd be an uncivilized civilization.
Well, the Aztecs were civilized, but then again, they murdered people and threw them down their temples and stuff.
But that was what was done back in the day.
Yeah, that's
what
you did.
Pretty uncivilized behavior, if you ask me.
Yeah, but they didn't think so.
It's keeping up with the Joneses, though. If the Joneses are killing off their children and throwing them into fires.
Oh, we better murder some of our.
Yeah, right. Come on, we've got five children. Come on, we can get rid of one of them
and just show it to everyone. That'll go down well.
Yeah, get little Bobby there. He's done fuck all for weeks. He's just eating food. There's nothing around the house. His bedroom's a mess. Let's sacrifice him.
Yeah. That'll appease the gods.
Yeah.
Good one.
Yeah, good one.
So,
whatever.
Always preparing for the newer empires to develop and prosper.
Yeah.
So that's the overall premise. Everybody represents a civilization at the peak of their... I don't know, time.
Yeah. Well, it's there's empires like
the
everywhere.
Golden Age, the Golden
yeah,
Age.
Yeah, the Golden Age. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, the Golden Age. And then what's happened is, as with every Golden Age, it has to come to an end, and then slowly.
And do you, and I think of sportsmen. You know, you can quit while you're at the peak of your game,
mm-hmm.
or you can push on and have like a horrible slow decline, and everyone looks at you and points like, and
laughs. Embarrassing.
I'm sure we'll talk about this in a minute, but that is, I think, one of the key things in this game. Is just that. That tension of not knowing, because you choose when to go into decline. Mm-hmm. You don't get pushed into going into decline. No. You have to choose to do it, and that the point when you do that is a very kind of I can push it one more turn, but then other things can interact with you. That's a big deal in this game.
But it's a very small world. There's empires everywhere because that's as many people that you're playing, and they're all competing for the same.
And they're
round.
All peaceful.
Oh, well, no, not by any means. No, sir.
This is no collaborative game, this one. This one gets the sweat on the brow.
Yeah.
So what do you get in the box,
well, the objective of the game is to accrue the most number of victory coins by the conclusion of the 10th round. Yes. So that's how you determine your winner, by occupying territory on the board and earning victory coins.
Mm-hmm.
Is it always the 10th round?
In the standard game, it's 10.
Oh, right. The amount on the board.
Okay. It's even on the board there, so yes.
Yeah, yeah. The amount of rounds depends on the amount of players that you have playing.
I always thought it was just the size of the map.
No, you play less rounds in 5 and 6 player.
Quickly opening up the board.
Look
at that.
There's,
4 players. There's
a very interesting. Yeah. There's a very interesting thing that we have in this. We'll discuss this in components as well. But the maps are completely different for the amount of players that you're playing with.
Yeah.
And then in the largest amount of players, you only play 8 turns, but it takes a lot longer just because you have so many players. And you play 10 rounds when you have, I think, 3 or 4 players.
I think the major difference is there's a rainbow on the larger map.
That's to keep you content.
It's to keep you happy while you're all murdering each other.
Yeah, false sense of security.
Yeah. So, occupying territories is the main objective of the game. And you earn coins at the conclusion of your turn equal to the number of territories that you occupy plus the additional bonuses earned by special abilities.
Which is also another cool thing, which I'll talk about later.
So the components, what do you get in the box?
What do you get in the box?
It's a very nicely packed box.
Yeah, very, very nice.
Whereabouts is it on the Aaron Graham scale?
I'd say it's medium, but the amount of components that you get is what you would expect from a larger game like Agricola or one of the more involved $100 plus games. But this one's a 2 on the Aaron Graham board game scale.
Yeah.
Or the AGBGS.
Yeah. And this is we're talking about the core set.
Yeah, this is just the core game. Yeah. There's another one that's similar that you can play with, but this one itself, it's like middle of the range, around the $60 to $80 mark, and you get a lot of good quality components in here, like storage trays. The box is made really well. The maps that it comes with, different for every different amount of players that you have.
That's right.
But they're fully printed out really nice boards, and that's weird. You don't get a lot of variable maps in board games generally.
Yeah.
This is really good. Usually I say, just ignore that half of the board if you're going to play 2-player, or like, just choose some, like, Power Grid comes with 2 boards, but if you want to play with less players, it's just like, I'll just roll a dice and see which ones you don't play with that round. This one's got fully printed, completely different strategic elements to every single map.
So you don't end up with a useless side of the board.
Yeah.
You've actually got a practical, useful side.
Yeah.
Two useful sides, even. So two useful sides of the board.
Two boards, practically.
That nicely fit together.
Well, I was trying to fit them all together. When I opened it up, I thought, right, get out the map, add this one on the side. I was like, hey, wait a minute. How come the amount of rounds is on there?
I'm going to take 38 turns, apparently. 10 on this one, 8 on this one.
What else do you get? You get an assorted array of race banners. And the race banners all, let's see, typical races, rat men, Amazons, orcs, ghouls, giants,
Amazons, Tritons, trolls.
Amazons. Skeletons, wizards, trolls,
Amazons.
Ratmen.
Don't go past the Amazons.
Amazons again.
Oh, yeah. Hang on, let me just Google that. Oh, yeah.
Amazons.
And you come up with the way to purchase things from online.
Yeah.
That's the first thing you'll get.
I googled Amazon's and all I ended up was just buying
Amazon.com. Matt cleaned that up a bit, didn't he?
Oh, no.
Amazonian, scantily clad Lara Croft type woman. Yeah, oh, okay.
Wonder Woman-esque.
So there's a lot of variation for the races. And on each race banner, you've got, of course...
The amount of
troops that each of the units that each one will command. So in the case of the Ratmen, you start off with 8 troops to begin with, and some cheese by the looks of it. Although that's just their symbol.
And different skills.
The Ratmen, they have, I think it's one of the highest.
The Ratmen's like the weirdest one to start with just because, humans. There are a lot of different variations. Areas on the board that are different, like plains, mountains, forests and such. So some of the races will have bonuses if you are occupying one of those regions at the end of the turn.
Giants like mountains.
So giants like mountains, humans, you get a bonus coin for each farmland region you occupy.
That's true.
And they all are the same, apart from ratmen is the... which have no ability apart from there's shitloads of them.
They've got the most number of starting troops in the whole out
of
the game. Two more than any other race. So they've got 8. Then the Amazons, for example, when you attack with an Amazon, you start off with
Amazons,
6, but you get an additional...
Amazons?
Well, you get more value for your money by an Amazon.
Matt. I was just on my phone.
Show me.
Yeah, look.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
that's an Amazon.
The prices on those books are fantastic.
Yeah, I know. It's like that's a trilogy for that price. It's insane. Sorry, Matt, what are we doing?
But wait, there's more. Whenever you attack with your Amazons,
small world.
You get an additional 4 Amazons to attack with. So all of a sudden, your 6 is now 10.
They're coming out of the woods.
When you're attacking. And the other races, they all have, like Aaron said...
Apocalypse Gangbang 5.
They're coming out of the woods.
They're coming out everywhere.
Sorry, Matt. We're all hung up on those Amazons.
Can I talk about ghouls? Ghouls, please.
Sorry,
ghouls. Ghouls are one of the more interesting, races because when they go into decline, they're the only one that you can still attack with.
So
when you flip them over and they're no longer useful, they are useful because they can still attack. They're flesh eating monsters.
Because sort of flipping them over and going into decline, it's sort of saying they're dying off. So the ghouls thematically are living on and doing their own thing.
So what else do you get in the box? We get the special ability tokens,
this
banners.
Is awesome. Yeah.
So what you do is you take a race banner and you take a special ability banner, put them together, and you come up with mounted ghouls or forest orcs or flying orcs or wealthy giants.
How do they team up? Because it's not just like you don't get to choose which one.
Yeah. So you've got to
shuffle them up. Yeah, each pile, shuffle them up side by side, then you draw the top 5 off, and they're your starting races and abilities. So you line them up 1 to 5, and in each player's turn, they get to choose one of those. Now, if you skip over the first one and you go to the second or third or fourth, they each get a victory coin attached to them. So in subsequent turns, if somebody takes those ones, they get a little bit of an incentive for taking them. So you might end up with... Oh, what's a really crap one?
Dwarves are bad and stout is pretty lame.
Stout dwarves. So if you end up with stout dwarves, you don't necessarily... Not entirely happy with that.
Yeah.
But if it's been passed over a couple of times, you might pick up a couple of extra victory points.
Yeah, so it's
just
kind
for
of
doing
like
that.
People will pay money to get the ones that are further down the list.
Yep.
And then when people have been buying them for 1, 2, 3 coins, the one that's been there for ages doesn't ever get shuffled away until someone
buys it.
But it's got all these coins that people have been paying for on it. So they're kind of like, oh, I'm going to have this shit race for a turn, but I'll get all the money on top of it as well.
You go have a turn with them and then you go into decline straight away.
It's a really good idea to incentivize you to try these combinations that people are like, oh, that one's crap, don't do that one. And you're like, but I'll get 5 money for it. You just kind of take some of those turns.
You don't have to cover a lot of ground to understand the rule either. It's such a simple way
it's
of happening.
It's really, really simple. Yeah.
I'd also like how the instructions for how you fit the races and the special powers together, it's quite cool. It says, Its round edge fitting snugly into the banner's round opening.
I don't think that is. It's pretty obvious that it does that. You I know, look at
into
them, like,
the banner's round opening.
Do the same with the special power badges, shuffling them and placing one to the left of each race banner, its round edge fitting snugly into the banner's round opening. They're so proud of themselves, aren't yeah. they? They're going, like, we've got a machine which will cut this out this way and cut a convex thing here and a concave thing there. And when we put them together... snuggly.
Small world. Also, 22-piece jigsaw puzzles.
Yeah, very simple.
Great. Well, thanks, small world.
But boy, do they fit together
well.
It's like they were made for each other.
Boy, that's snug.
Yeah.
Oh, they're so pretty.
We say that all the time now.
Too proud of themselves.
But what that tells you is, I don't know, elegance in design.
Yeah.
Thoughtful design. You know, put them together. They're going to stay together.
Says they need a little bit of modesty down at Days of Wonder, I think. Yeah. It's like, let us be the judge of how snugly they fit together.
Fit the beautifully crafted cards together. Yeah. And take a moment to appreciate how snugly they fit together.
Take a look at them from several different views. Yeah. Get down a table height and have a look across the table. And see how flat they are. And
so well made. Just give us a pat on the back.
The instruction manual is like 40 pages long. For a game, it could be one page. It's just, you know, adjectives and this. Oh, it's beautiful.
So your banners and your race banners and your special powers, they very well designed. But what good are they without troop tokens, without your actual units? They've given you a very thoughtfully designed tray of tokens. Which have all the armies. In there. They fit quite snugly in those boxes. They're not coming out. They even give you a little lid so you don't accidentally
That happens with every single other game that I own. It's the only one that has a lid.
Dominion has the trays in the box, but no lid.
Yeah, it does, but they've fallen out of there.
There's one race that you won't find banners for, and that's the Lost Race. Now, when you start up a game, you need to put the Lost Race out on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And they represent the last great civilization in decline.
Mm-hmm. So these are the ones that you're kind of pushing out of their territory.
Yes, think of them as the indigenous population.
Their Lost Tribe counters are just past here. They're in there.
That's right.
Yeah.
They are here.
I thought you said you didn't get them.
No.
Oh, they don't have a banner.
They don't have a banner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't play as the Lost Tribe.
That's right.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. No, they're just pre-existing on the board, and they make it more interesting when it comes time to occupy spaces in that you have to kick them off their land, send them off. You don't even send them off to a reservation or anything like that.
You just murder them.
Take their land.
No one's ever done that before. No, invading another country.
Who would do such a thing?
No, that's just evil.
That's evil.
It's an evil empire.
So those unit tokens are really great. Then, of course, I'm saluting as we hear some trumpets in the background. You have various attributed to the abilities, fortifications. Where are those things?
Troll caves.
Okay. Mountains. Those sort of things. Yeah. Mm. So these are things that you chuck on the board underneath
when you're trying to invade an area.
They add +1 to whatever you're trying to do. So whenever you're trying to occupy a land, if it's a vacant, empty land, it's +2 to get in there. So you need to spend 2 troops to occupy any normal land.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that land is mountainous, for example, it'll cost you +3. So it's 3 unit tokens to get in there. If that happens to be occupied... the land is occupied by one of the Lost Tribes or one of your opponents, it's then +1 for every token stacked on that space. Yeah. So all of a sudden, if you're trying to attack a mountainous space and there are 3 giants on there, it's 2 to get on there. 1 because it's a mountain, so that's 3. And then if there are 2 troll tokens on there, there's an extra 2. So you're up for 5 just to take over that land. Yeah. But
in a race like Dwarfs, you only get 3. So you really depend on what special power you've got. So if you've only got 3 guys...
This is a bit hard.
They've
added something into this which makes it a little bit more... this, again, is the push your luck element. So you can take on that mountainous area full of trolls and you need 5 units. And you've got 3.
You're 3 short. Yeah.
You're 3 short. You can roll a 6-sided dice, which is a reinforcement dice, which has 3 blank sides and 3 sides that have 1, 2, and 3 on it, 3 pips. Now, if you successfully roll the 3 pips side...
Three dwarves come out of the mountains.
Three dwarves come out of the mountains to help you. That's it. And you can take it over. And everyone cheers, and except for the trolls, because they've been murdered. But if, on the other hand, you roll one or two, and that's still less than what you need to take over the land, or you roll nothing at all, then, of course, your troops get taken back to your billeting site in shame.
So usually you can't just push your luck on every single one, otherwise you just roll the dice on every conquest you do. So you can only do that on the last conquest that you make on each turn.
When you find that you're short one or two troops.
And what happens if you have a bit of land, you send your troops into one area and you're unsuccessful?
They come back to you.
They come back to you. Can you then try to go into an adjacent land?
You can't. That's it. That signifies the end of
one that you do, right?
Oh, but that's for the roll, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But what happens to those troops? Like, if you said, all right.
I think they just get put back in your hand.
They come back to your hand for the redeployment phase, which is.
Okay.
So you have the combat phase. I think it's called the combat phase.
Yeah.
The conquest phase. So you're going out there expanding, and then redeployment allows you to move as many units as you want from your occupied lands. Mm-hmm. Back either into your hand, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
You can totally abandon lands. And some abilities encourage you to do that because you get bonus points.
Almost every rule that we've said can be broken by either one of the special powers or the races. Yeah. So we'll get into talking about
that. So it's not very linear in that respect. It's not, this is the rule and that's the outcome. Yeah. It's, this is the rule, but then here's an exception and here's an exception. It's one of those things where, it always says in these games, where the card appears to disagree with the rule, the card is what you
takes
follow.
Takes
and that's the amazing thing that adds to playability is the multitude of combinations of races and special powers that you can get, isn't it?
Yeah.
For those, I mean, it would take a mad mathematician to figure out the number of combinations, I'm sure, or a calculator with lots of space.
Yeah.
But
the answer is always lots.
With, what is it?
Watch out.
14 major races, 14 races, and then there's 20 special powers. Yeah. So
the 14, combinations are at least
six. There's at least 20,
16.
Because there's 20 things. So there's at least 20 combinations.
At least 20.
We're all mathematician or madmen.
So the answer, you bring those back. You can redeploy them however you like then.
Yeah,
so you can fortify.
Because you want to. So you attack some area with a bunch of things, knock those trolls off that mountain.
Mm. You want to hold on to it then.
Wait a minute.
So you redeploy.
Yeah, at the other end of your occupied territory.
Yeah, you've only got
some
madman
who's going to invade you. Yeah, so let's
exactly
go back
right.
There and like,
so you can move
bolster,
some guys from your mountain attack force back to defend.
Yeah, because the mountain's going to be
your rear end.
Yeah.
Now, to demonstrate to really hit home that that waning power you have as your civilization has reached its pinnacle, is the further you extend yourself, the less troops you have on each subsequent turn to be able to deploy.
Because you need to leave one.
So you need to leave one. And then if anyone is destroyed in combat, that goes back to the box.
Yeah.
And so your resources are dwindling. They're going smaller and smaller and smaller. So...
And in turn, the amount of victory points that you're earning each round
as
your opponents may be earning more than you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right.
Yeah.
So then the urge to go into decline becomes very attractive. Mm. So in which case you flip over all of your units. There's a grey, so there's a coloured side, which shows the active unit. You flip it over and there's a greyed outside, which is the race in
same
decline.
Same up, but grey.
Same up, but grey, yes.
Yeah, like it's fading into the past.
I think it takes extra colour to make the grey.
Oh, it's a snow grey.
It fits really snugly. Even when you flip it over, they fit snugly together. Oh, no, you discard the trait when you
discard it. No. However, you do flip it over and it's not available to you. So the special ability is no longer available.
But it still fits snugly together, though, Matt.
It does,
that's good. Yeah, that's important. Yeah, me too. I thought it was going to be awkward.
Now, one of those exceptions that we talk of again is the spirit special power.
Oh, I love
where if
this
you
one.
Flip
yeah.
the spirit special the yeah. spirit the, special the, power the spirit's special power over, it actually allows you to go into decline. And have a second race, because normally the rule is you're only allowed to have one race in decline and one active race, mm-hmm. but the spirit's ability lets you have two races in decline.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's an example of this is the rule, but this is an exception
so
to the rule.
So you could quickly grab that race that's got the five victory tokens on it,
yep.
send that out, immediately to put it into decline, keep the spirits and this new one, and grab another one on the next round.
Yeah. Wow. And that's one of my favorite bits about this, is that you never play with the same traits and races.
No.
I call them traits. They call them special powers. Traits and... I say traits. You never play with the same traits and races together. And so you get some really, really interesting combinations. Ghouls, we said before, even when they're in decline, you can still keep attacking. Usually when you go into decline, you remove all of your... You flip them all over so they're gray. Remove all of them apart from one from the board, so they're dying out. There's only very sparse population
they're
left in each area.
Easy to
just
decline.
Knock them out of there.
Yeah.
But then I played a game where we had spirit ghouls, so they were still attacking like a second race. I could have them in decline, another race in decline, and an active race.
Yeah.
It was just like they stayed on the board and they were just wreaking havoc, and I'm just like playing as if I was playing three players' turns because of a weird...
Yeah.
Oh, remember when we played... Ankh-Morpork the other week, and you're just like, I've never seen this combination of cards before, and you want to like turn three.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff happens in this one. You just get some unbeatable combinations.
That's interesting, because if you had those spirit ghouls, that gives you the opportunity to literally play with, because there's only really enough time to send maybe three.
Yeah, I think three's like
four
the
would
normal...
be pushing it.
Yeah.
Three races into decline. So that's pretty much, that's an ideal combination because you get your first race, immediately send into decline, that second turn come around, you pick your new race, send them out.
It just takes a lot more time than you expect.
Because you miss
to
a go, essentially.
Yeah, well,
if
you go into decline, that's the end of your turn. At the very beginning, you don't do anything other than flip them all over.
Mm.
And then you cannot choose... a new race until it's your turn again. So that's one of the other rules.
One of the design features which I just sort of triggered here is we're talking about, it sounds like there's a lot of races, there's a lot of powers, and just to remember them all, it's like it's just too much to remember. And I know there's a feature that you guys want to talk about. However, on the actual cards and the actual tiles themselves, there's this...
Oh, yeah.
There's like a bizarre little logo, which doesn't necessarily make any sense in itself.
Okay, some of them...
But if you've played through the game once and you've read the definition of what the card does, I'm sure the next time you come out, you'd look at that little logo, like the Amazons, which we read before, has four Amazons and a plus four logo in the middle of it, which doesn't mean anything if you're playing for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But now that you know that four of them are going to... during Conquest... you may use an additional four.
Yeah.
You look at that and you go, oh, that's right. And you don't need to reference anything.
It's like a shorthand for people that have played it a few times.
Exactly,
and you don't need a big reference sheet.
Oh, did you want to mention that?
Yeah,
Reference sheet. We have an affinity for reference sheets.
Yeah. Yeah. Love a good reference sheet.
Yes. And again, Small World and Days of Wonder have not let us down.
Yeah, I know.
This
look
is a great
this.
Reference sheet.
Dave was saying before, you have to refer to the rule book a lot, because there's a lot of weird corner cases. There's a lot of, how is this interaction with this rule going to come up? Is this even a rule? I don't know what the thing is.
And I was thinking, what a hassle. I'm going to have to go back to the instruction manual all of the time.
Yeah, and there's one, when I play Power Grid, you have to keep flicking back and forth to check how many resources to fill it up with, and it's like, there's no good reference sheet. This one's got all of it printed really nicely on just a kind of like a square A4 kind of thing.
A square A4.
Printers
everywhere are ripping their hair
out. A4 is not square.
No.
A4 squared, sure.
When you're reading the manual, you get a game, open it up, start reading the manual, and that's what I was going through each page, and I was going, man, this is going to be...
That's
I'm going to have to
complex.
Keep referencing this the whole time. And then you put that down and you go, all right, what else have we got in the box? Oh, these really cool reference sheets, which mean I don't have to worry about them. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, it's so good.
One of the things I judge a good game by is being able to have a reference sheet that almost makes the rules redundant.
Yeah.
Simply because the information's there. If you can pick up the reference sheet and play with that, then I think they've really hit the target.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I was saying about the tiles, having that design where there's, like what you were saying, Aaron, there's a shorthand for what the race actually does. I think that takes it another step further, It's almost like the reference sheet becomes part of the game. and makes it even easier to play without having a heavier face in the instructions.
Like, I barely refer to the rules at all now because it covers most of the cases there.
I make up my own.
I just make up the rules for every game I play.
All right, so we covered everything that's in the box, isn't it?
Pretty much. There's a lot of the victory points are represented by some nice coins. Now they're typical cardboard stock coins with values of 1.
You couldn't
floss
with them unless
5.
You had really gappy teeth.
Yeah.
Aaron, well
now,
done.
Oh, an interesting feature is he's trying to floss his teeth.
I can check it out.
He can.
This is a store copy.
Don't worry, I can too.
Oh, we both can.
Oh my god! We're in a room with like a bunch of gap-toothed rednecks here. Oh, hey, listeners, I've got a fine set of teeth for the first time.
Smaller upset.
Please donate to the dental program for Seven Land Ham. We are the best-looking podcast on the internet. We just have interesting teeth. But my God, you should see the view I've got now. I can't stop staring at their teeth.
Can't unsee it.
It's like I'm just looking across the table and just seeing teeth. There's nothing else. Oh, just look, stare at the
just
table.
Have a look at focus on the artwork.
But yeah, look at the. There's no teeth in the artwork. Mm. Oh, there's shitloads of teeth in that one.
Focus on Austin Mengler's artwork. Yeah. So the coins. Now this is how we all got here because they could fit in between your teeth.
Yeah, I'm going to floss with one of these.
People coming to Good Game St James. If you want to play Small World, just
don't.
Trust it.
Use
the
gloves.
Points have been used as dental floss.
Victory points are kept hidden from your opponents. Yeah, so when you receive them, you put them face down, and they're not revealed until the end. That way, you're. Your opponents can sort of see how many you're accumulating, but they're not necessarily looking at how many. Yeah. So if you really wanted to, the values are 1, 3, and 5. So if you scored 5 points, you could take 5 ones if you really wanted to confuse the hell out of your opponents. Maybe. But I like that feature. That's that hidden scoring. How well you're doing until the very end.
Yeah.
Because you're
looking across the table, you're going, should I go into a decline? Should I see this out? You know, you look across the table. If everything was ones, you can count up and go, I don't need to because that guy's, you know, and got less than me. But
I don't like it when games devolve into just doing some math. There's a few like very short turn based
like
games.
Magic the Gathering.
Even with magic, there's no math in magic.
Okay, sorry.
But in magic, they've got a bunch of creatures out, and you do some math, and you're like, as long as he doesn't top deck this and this, like I'll do it. But there's still that element there. Whereas in some games, I'm trying to think of one.
Do you want us to break? Do you want us to blob here and come back with the answer?
Well, like Agricola, you can see the points that are kind of available for people and you can see what their farms are like, but then the last turn just ends up being just like a point grab and you're just like, I'm just going to I literally just spend my last few turns doing maths. Right. Because you're just like, how can I maximize my points with the amount of turns that I have?
I think we've bought Agricola up a few times now, so I think we should make that our next game.
I think we should play Agricola next month.
We're getting all yeomanry down on the land.
We're going to Agricola the shit Agricola. Out of something.
All right, guys, we've just jumped way ahead in the podcast.
Sorry.
Anyway, you want to sign off now?
No. That was the particular feeling I had about counting points, and I like that this is the hidden points, and you're just kind of like, did he get 7 on the last time? Did he get 8? I can't tell whether he did it. And so, yeah, having that sneaky, like, keeping your coins face down. I always play with mine, though, so people always know how many I have.
Look, the only last thing I want to say is the important rules of this game.
It won't be the last thing he says.
It won't be the last thing, but it'll probably be the most poignant thing.
Let us be the judge of that, Matt. What have you got?
Well, the last... When we did... what did we do last time?
We did Ankh-Morpork.
Yeah. I had the three most important rules of the game. So in similar fashion, for Small World, three most important rules. You may not have any more than one active race in decline... One active race or race in decline at any time.
Right.
Unless advised, all occupation of neighbouring territories must be conducted adjacently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Again, because you could have the flying ratmen, and all of a sudden
that's
you're popping up all over the place. Yeah. Or the seafaring skeletons who, they just pop up wherever there's water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the third one is after going to decline, you cannot select a new race or ability combo until the beginning of your next turn. That's it. They're the three most important rules of small world, I think.
Matt's and, stamped that down.
And read the reference sheet.
There's one more that we didn't mention, which is either when you go into decline or at the start of the game, when you pick your race, you just get these tokens in your hand. Mm. And the tokens are equal to the amount of numbers from the race plus the amount of numbers on the special powers. And some of them are, like, halflings are quite plentiful. There's six of them. But if you want to the more powerful the ability, generally, the less things you get to use with it. So let's say merchant halflings is our example here. If you're a merchant race, you collect one bonus for any region that you occupy at turn's end. And that's victory points. Like, you get a victory point for everyone for just standing in it.
Yeah.
And then,
so if you're occupying seven regions at the end of your turn, you will get 14.
14 victory points, which
maths.
Is massive.
Yeah, that was
like, that's really huge. And then, say, halflings, merchant, because of that ability is powerful, it's giving you double victory points pretty much. Yeah. You only get two units. So, say you pick the merchant halflings as your first one, you're going to get the two units from merchant and the six units from halflings, so you have eight altogether. And then you have to start coming into the board from the edge. Mm. And that can be any edge of the board. It can't be from water unless you're a seafaring, I think. Mm. Halflings are another bad example because they break that rule in particular. Yeah.
I think you can come in on the side of the map on a thing that does border
on the sea. Yeah.
You can, but the seafaring just allows you to occupy the sea and the lake if it was land.
I'm merchant halflings. There's an empty area on the edge of the board. I'm going to choose that as my entry point. I'll put two of my eight down. Mm. Then there's a lost race in the next one, but apart from the lost race, it's empty. That's going to take me three. So I've got I've used my two for the first one, three for the next one, and then say there's one of David's trolls living on a mountain.
Oh yeah, that's tough.
So that's going to take me four. I've only got three left. So as my last attack, I'm going to go put three halflings on there, and I'm going to need to roll a one, two, or three on the dice, which is like a 50-50 shot. And then let's roll the dice. Oh.
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, two. I rolled a two. Oh. I was successful in my endeavor, and I kick David's troll off the mountain, and I've got three halflings there.
And he was happy, troll there, because it was a mountain.
Yeah, I know, it was hanging out on the mountain. Yeah. now I can redistribute my halflings. So I've got the three there, the three in the middle, and the two in the first one. And if I think someone's going to attack the two, I'll move my three from the mountain over there, and then I think that's the end of my go. Yeah, so that's just like, that's a turn, and it's just like, you have these halflings that you gather them all back up at the start of your turn. You can then start conquering new regions and that sort of thing.
But less of them, of course.
But slightly less every time.
As we cover up with the rat men, you get loads of them and they hang a lantern on the fact that they've got no abilities.
Yeah.
You just got lots of them.
Mm-hmm. So you get some really potent combinations, but also some really crap ones. Dwarves don't have a particularly powerful ability. They collect a bonus coin for each mine you occupy. There's only three or four mines on the board.
And they're not next to each other.
So, yeah. And you only get three dwarves from picking them. And so you get a low one like merchant dwarves. And it doesn't matter that you're getting double points because you can only...
Yeah.
And you only get five tokens to put down and you can't even conquer them. That's usually go really late.
Yeah, that's a combination you would jump over and you'd probably only pick up if there was a ton of victory points on it because everyone else had been skipping it.
Exactly, yeah.
But that's the fun of it, isn't it? It's like as soon as the cards get the races and powers get dealt out, you're checking them out to see which ones it is.
And some of them are hilarious as well. Dragon Master Elves.
Oh, what did I have? I had Dragon Master Giants today. That was great.
Yeah.
I really like... I'm taken by the idea of the flying ratmen.
That is scary.
That's 13 ratmen, and you can attack. Just like Apocalypse Now, Ride of the Valkyrie style.
Dropping rats.
Rats from the sky.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da. And
it's
here they come attacking.
Rats. Hallelujah.
That's not the way I was going. I was
bringing out the gay anthem.
It's raining rats.
Yeah. I'm trying to help. All of the feedback we've ever got was, I was just trying to appeal to all of our
not pro gay enough.
Our listeners. Oh, was that? Yeah, no, they were saying that we were.
Oh, we
and
too pro gay.
They enjoyed the pro gamers, and they also enjoyed it when we talked about babes. And I've overly covered that with Amazons.
Oh, okay. Tonight. That's good.
We need to move away from that. We're hot babe heavy.
We're the podcast that gives our listeners what they want.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Request literally anything and we'll probably do it.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's pretty
anything.
Much
anything.
Yeah. All right. I reckon the meat axe is going to have his fun with that one.
Oh, yeah.
Expansions.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, here we go. Expansions. You can't talk.
Oh, my goodness.
Be overly erotic, yeah. And not talk
about
expanding.
Should we go from big to small or small to big?
Big to small.
Big to small. What's the biggest small world expansion?
The biggest small world expansion is... Oh, gee, that's really... That's hard, because is it a deck of cards?
Is it a deck of cards?
Or is it the map?
That's by far the biggest. This is physically the biggest.
Small World Underground.
Small World Underground.
Underground. Yeah.
Standalone.
I love it. I love the when in a hole, keep digging. So basically, it is the game of Small World Underground. And it brings a whole new slew of races.
I played Kraken once. I loved it.
Kraken.
You just get in the water enough. Maybe there was the ability it had, but I was occupied a water area.
Yeah.
And probably like the seafaring ability or something like that. And nothing could get near. No one else was coming to get me because I was just hanging out there for ages. And I think I'd pretty much milked it for victory points for the entire game. You know.
So
think
regular
about anything that hangs out in Undermountain, basically drow, lizard men, cultist, spider girls.
It's like mushroom men. Leeches.
Ooh, particularly disgusting shadow mimes. Now, everyone hates mimes.
Yeah.
Shadow mimes, that's even worse.
Is
that the one with Kraken in it?
Yeah, it is.
Original Small World's got the very generic fantasy races, Amazons, dwarves, humans, orcs, elves, and such. Underground goes for a lot more of the weirder ones. Yeah, like the more... odd fantasy kind of tropes. I really like the art design of the underground one as well.
Yeah.
As opposed to it being like a rolling plains and hills and mountains and stuff. It's all this underground lakes and volcanic pits and that sort of thing. So Small World Underground actually adds an entire new set of races, an entire new set of traits. It's a completely new game, but with the same mechanics.
Same artist did the thing as well. I haven't got his name here. I did see it in
research. I really like the artist in this game.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? It's very, very clear. And it's not messy.
So the next biggest one.
Small World Realms literally allows you to rebuild the worlds of Small World yourself.
Oh, cool.
With tile modifications, so you can change the terrain. You can include more water spaces. You can include make little islands.
Oh, you can just make them yourself.
Literally, you're making the world. So cool.
I've seen that, I've played that as well. I didn't realize. you know when some dude just rolls up with like some boxes and you go, "We're playing Small World." Boom, here we go.
He's actually got six expansions just packed in one box.
And you just go, "This game's got so much stuff in it."
That makes sense when you think about the number of options you have with the special powers and the Small World races, to actually have a modular terrain board that you can fight over. So there's so much customization, so much longevity in a game like this.
This is a huge replay value in this
one. For sure.
Now we've got, next is a mini expansion called Be Not Afraid.
Oh, fun.
Which includes five new races, five new special powers, and a special tray to store them all in. So that's very thoughtful. Days of Wonder, you are so thoughtful. We love you. Mm-hmm. It actually comes with a spare race banner as well. I noticed there's a few blank ones. So you can create your own races, create your own special abilities if you really want to, if you're bored of the other ones. So you could come up with your, I don't know, rampaging...
Beavers.
Now we're talking. My goodness.
Copyright, Seven Land Hand. So rampaging Small Water... Beavers? The mini expansion just adds a few more races and a new tray. And then we have a couple of other mini expansions which give you...
The Cursed one is cool.
Cursed is one.
Yeah, Cursed, the Cursed is really good. The story of Cursed is that they took competition entries and a lot of people submitted new ones and they voted on the best ones, I think, on the website.
Oh, wow. Is that how it came about?
And the designer himself chose the ones that were chosen for the mini expansion Cursed. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You could be where... Halflings, which I think, if you like. So that's awesome. Cursed. And then there is the Grand Dames, which have the evocative artwork. So we've got the White Ladies and the gypsies.
Any more Amazons in there? Or they just
and the priestesses. Well, they're all
six
of
different
that
different
ilk.
Artwork Amazons.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So
Grand Dames of Small World.
That's it. So that's the sexy expansion.
Okay. And then what have we got there?
And then the final one that I've got, we've got in front of us.
Did you play with this one,
David? I don't believe I've ever played with this one, no.
Tales and Legends, which is a deck of cards that... Well, Aaron, you know a bit more about it?
Yeah, I've seen this one. I haven't played with it. But what it does is, in addition to the game... after you've played this one a lot, it can... if you start playing with an established group of players, there's not enough randomness to the game.
Insane amount of randomness.
Oh, yeah, there is. But in things outside of the races, it's kind of very mathematical. You're like, 3 is going to take over this, and 2 is going to take over this. Yeah. Tales and Legends adds a deck of cards to the game that you have to resolve at the start of each of your turns, I think. And then you draw a card from the deck, and you have to resolve it, and it's like some disaster that wipes out some part of the board.
So it's almost like the game's turn.
Exactly.
Okay. So it's an event deck.
Yeah, it's like an event. It's an event deck, pretty much. So it changes a little bit of your strategy, because you might have to... play around some area being destroyed. Sweet. Or like there's a famine or something or another. I think it just adds a little bit more randomness to the already insanely random game that there is.
Oh, that's very cool.
I don't know how much customization or how many options Vinci had when that was released, because I know it was a similar sort of game.
But it was just the one release?
I'm pretty sure it was just the one release. But certainly, I think renaming it, rebranding it as Small World was definitely a good choice, for them, because they're appealing then to a wider range, that fantasy theme, high fantasy theme, high customization.
Thematically, the game's great. Yeah, it's got a lot going for it.
Yeah. I love it. It's a great game. It's one that I definitely have in my collection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a really good game. Really easy to introduce to people.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
I've played it with people that haven't played too many board games at all, and it's very grokkable. You see how the
it's very gropable.
Gropable.
Mm.
Do you guys know grokking? Like if you grok something,
get ready. It's just like okay.
It stands
for something, doesn't it?
I don't think so. It's just a game designer just invented the word grok. Just to say you fully and completely just get
understand it.
You get it. So it's when you see that a Crowan horse in Magic, it's very grokkable. You're like, oh, what does this do? I'll give it to my opponent. Oh, it's like giving them the Trojan horse, and I get 1/1s every turn.
Right.
This one's very grokkable, and it's just like you see how the traits line up with the powers, and you're like, oh, so it's just that's going to be the random element. It's going to be different every time I play. How do I take over a thing? It's 2. For every 1 that you see there, you add another 1. Yeah.
You need 1 experienced gamer in the room, and this is just easily transferred.
It's really
to
easily pickupable. Yep. I really like it for that. And the expansions. I didn't know that. I thought Realms was just another set of boards. I didn't realize it was a fully customizable map set.
I'd played with it.
That gives me a weird little board game hard on.
Well,
there are lots of extra tokens and things in there as well. So, I guess different.
Lots of stuff in there.
Yeah, lots of things. So it's good. So I think it's all positive review all around, I think.
Yeah. What are some of your guys' favorite traits and races?
Well, I'm still a bit excited about having the Dragon Master Giants from today. That was
Dragon Master Giants.
That was a hell of a lot of fun.
The Dragon Master trait?
Off the top of my head, that was you could go to an area and just destroy any race that was there, no matter how many. I think it was just with one or something.
Dragon Master, you get a little dragon
and just go and bomb it on something. It has to be an adjacent
area. So
you
use the dragon to conquer a region using a single token.
Yeah.
The region occupied by the dragon is immune to conquests and racial and special powers. So
And it doesn't matter how many they've got there.
So they've
just
got
like,
10 guys stacked up there.
Goodbye,
10
guys.
Dragon Master giants. I'll use one giant riding a dragon to kill every single one of the guys in there.
The giants, if they're in mountains, can go into surrounding areas, I think, for 1.
Oh, because they're coming down from the
mountain. Yeah, and they love that kind of shit. So once your giant starts running down the side of a mountain, there's nothing stopping him. So, with the 2 combination, I was just like, it was one of those, my eyes lit up when I saw that combination in the running sheet.
I'll stick by my flying ratman.
Flying ratman?
My flying ratman.
flying, because Aaron? You can just, usually they have to be adjacent, but flying means you can just conquer this weak region, conquer that weak region. Yeah.
That's oh, really? You can just go anywhere.
Yep.
Yeah. Aaron? My favorite, I've got a boring one and an interesting one. My favorite boring one is Merchant Tritons.
Right.
And you just take over all the coast regions just as quickly as you can at the start of the game. A merchant is just double points from every region that you own. So, collect one bonus coin for any region you occupy.
Right.
And Tritons require one less than normal to take over a coast area.
Yeah.
And you just spread your Tritons all over everywhere. Just leave them there because you still get victory points.
They're the merfolk of Swartzwald.
They're the merfolk, yeah, the Tritons. They've got weird seahorse faces though.
Sure, Triton thief.
And you just get a shitload of points to start the game. And then my second favorite one is Orcs.
For good reasons.
Yeah, this is one of the ones that incentivizes you to leave areas completely. Usually you want to leave a guy there because you'll get a point for it at the end of the turn.
So it says collect one bonus coin for each non-empty region you conquered this turn.
Yeah, so what you do is you collect, instead of leaving your orcs there, you just take them all back into your hand and start conquering new areas with them.
Yes.
And what was the one that I had with them? There was something ridiculous. Commando Orcs.
Commando Orcs. So that commandos sounds good already.
Yeah, their balls just hanging out. That's why they're my favorite.
Orcs are never wearing them.
So Commando Orcs, so they conquer any region using one less than normal. So you can take an empty area with one, but you just use it to just attack people constantly. So you conquer any of their regions using one less token. So say Matt has two guys defending one of his areas. I only require three orcs to take that one. And then I get a bonus coin at every turn just for interacting and killing people. And it was just really powerful. It was just this big engine that just rolled across the board, wherever the weak spots were, you'd just be commando orcs.
I could see under that combination, the commando orcs, if you were to do that, take them up at the end of every turn, that's an endless... You wouldn't need to go into decline.
Yeah, it's one of the ones that just kind of sticks around for ages. Yeah. Same with the skeletons, which is a really crazy one. Skeletons are one of the only ones that can actually replenish themselves. Every time you conquer two regions in a turn, you get one skeleton for every two regions you conquered.
Okay.
And you get that back to redeploy next turn, and they are... I had a friend that played something skeletons the entire game. Never went into decline. Yeah. Played all eight turns just skeletons because he was attacking the weak areas and getting bonuses for taking them over. So yeah, the game has some really crazy things.
All right, here we are with Aaron Graham's Small World Quiz.
We've got to find a sweet, catchy... I think a theme tune.
Yeah,
kind of woodwind instrument.
For those of you who don't know, it's probably no surprise. We actually played the theme tunes and all the blobs ourselves.
Yeah.
So we'll have to go back into the studio to do the Aaron Graham thematic quiz.
Thematic quiz theme.
Maybe not with harmony. I think three or four part harmonies.
Queen style.
That'd be great. Might take a while to do.
Same with the ones in the magic one. I think we could, Penny Whistle over the top of
Penny
a bass line.
Yeah, something.
Do-do-do-do-do. Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. Everything's really cranking. And then lead Penny Whistle. That'd be great.
Penny Whistle solo.
All right, so what have you got for us today?
All right, today I have... This one's more on the easy side. The last one was pretty challenging, and you guys might need your pens for this
Got pens ready.
Okay.
Did you have a winner?
Didn't have a winner for that one. No one knew who the author was with the facts from Ankh-Morpork. That one's still open.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to go back and
listen and then figure it out and get a badge.
Historical knowledge, we'll cover this later, is going to pay off for somebody.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll get to that soon.
Don't tease me like that.
Okay.
My small world quiz for today, I'm going to give you a trait and a race.
Am I allowed to have the reference card out?
No, please flip over your reference card. Oh. Jesus, whoopsie.
I didn't even read it.
Okay, I'm going to give you a trait and a race from any of the expansions of Small World. You're going to use your intuition and some previous knowledge to say, so there's 20 altogether, because there's 10, It's trait and race, so there's 20 altogether.
Okay. Right.
Ten are real.
What are we required to do?
Ten are real.
Uh-huh.
Ten are fake.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, so what are we doing?
So
I'm going to read out
a trait and a race.
Yeah.
The trait could be fake. The race could be fake. They could both be fake. They could both be real.
Right.
You have to... So write down each one. You can play this at home.
I haven't got that much paper.
Yeah.
All right, so we're just telling you which one's fake. Or we're telling you that something's fake.
Part of which one is fake? So there are 10 real... There are 5 real traits and 5 real races. Yeah?
Right.
Out of the 10 traits and 10 races that I'm going to read out. But they're all mixed up.
Okay.
It's so complicated. 5 real...
Number 1, this is an easy one for you guys.
All right. Okay.
Dragon Master Dog Men.
So you want to know which one's real and which one's fake?
They could both be real, they could both be fake as well.
Okay. So I'm going to write...
I've simplified my thing for ticks and crosses.
Ticks and crosses.
Yeah. So I've gone with true and false.
Okay.
A T and an F.
But for each one, right? For trait and for race.
Yeah, cool.
All right, sure. So number one, Dragon Master Dog Men.
Right.
Okay, number 2.
Yep.
Continuing with the theme.
Yep.
Normal Mud Men.
Okay.
Are they real or they're fake? They're both real or they're both fake?
Yeah,
who knows?
Yeah.
Is one real, is one fake? Is one of them kind of something else?
Yeah, I've been tricksy with it, have you?
Okay.
It's normalish. Continuing
with the something men theme.
Yeah.
Bivouacking Tree Men.
Okay.
Bivouacking Tree Men.
Bivouacking Tree Men.
Ready for question 4?
Yep.
Whoa, you guys are on top of this.
Number 4. It's not as complicated as we thought.
No.
Instructions
were mad. That was like one of that 40-page instruction manual. It was just like a one-page game.
I condensed it down to this reference sheet.
It's English, Czech, Polish, Chinese, English, Czech, Polish, Chinese, every section.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
Number four. Stony Stone Men.
Ooh.
What's real? What's fake? Who knows? Okay.
Right. Moving swiftly.
Number five. Yeah. I'm continuing my something men theme. Number 5. Sand shifting.
Yeah.
Sand men.
Okay.
Sand shifting sandmen. And the final one in the men category, olden seamen.
How do you spell seamen?
S-E-A.
Oh, there's an A in there, right?
M-E-N.
That helps with the validity, because I'm pretty sure it'll be an S-E-M-E-N one.
So, Dragon Master Dog Men, Normal Mod Men, Bivouacking Tree Men, Stony Stone Men, Sand Shifting Sand Men, Old Seamen.
Right.
Old seamen.
I found some old seamen in
a pond. Old seamen stains.
There probably is an old semen stain somewhere in the world, and he's just like, "Oh."
Was it true that Captain Pugwash there was a semen stains? Was that true?
I really want it to be true.
No.
Okay, number seven, Ultimate Pygmies.
Right.
Not Ultimate Pigmen.
Ultimate Pigmen. No, Ultimate Pygmies. Okay, number 8. This doesn't make any sense, but you guys might have known it because we discussed it earlier. Seafaring Flames.
Ooh.
Seafaring Flames.
Okay. Starting to doubt myself now.
Okay. I think you're going to have like too many of either false or true.
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Seafaring Flames. Number 9.
Yeah.
Were Homunculi. Which is an interesting concept in itself.
Yeah.
Were as in werewolf, except instead of a wolf, it's a homunculus.
Right.
Were homunculi. And my favorite one, number 10, apart from old semen, number 10, hordes of white ladies.
All right.
Done.
Okay. Locked in, okay.
I'm not changing my answer.
Hang on. So what are we scored out of here? 20?
Yeah, 20, yeah, sure.
Okay, right.
Really, that's the complex bit. It's just like, it's 10 out of 20, but 5 are from one side, 5 are from the other side.
Stop explaining yourself, Aaron. It gets more complicated.
Okay. Let me just explain the scoring. No, okay.
No.
Number 1,
yeah.
Dragon Master.
All right. How are we going to do this?
Yes, just go Dragon Master True. I'll circle them.
I've gone true and false.
Dragon Master Dogmen.
True, false.
True, false. Both correct. Well done.
Whoa. So we scored 2 points there?
Yeah.
All right. 2 points each.
Number two.
Yeah.
Normal Mudmen.
False, true.
Cross tick.
Correct. Both of you. Well done. Right. Nailing this one.
Yeah.
Okay. Number three. Bivouacking Tree Men.
True, true.
Tick, tick.
The correct answer is true, false.
Oh!
Tree Men, not real.
Not real.
Yeah, you've seen The Hobbit, right?
I have seen The Hobbit. Yeah, and there are Tree
Lord
Men.
Of the Rings, I mean.
Yeah. Number four, Stony Stone Men.
I've gone for true, true.
I've gone for cross, cross.
Mamma Cow, Texas. Cross, cross. Both fake. I made up both of them. Stony,
I wasn't
Stone
happy
Men.
With Stony, but I thought it was a risk.
Stony, Stone Men. Stone Men seems real. Stony seems like it could be real.
I know.
As well.
Stony seems like it couldn't be real. I was very unsure about that.
Okay. Let's see how we go with.
What if it was Stoned Stone Men?
Stoned Stone Men.
Number five.
Number five. Sand Shifting Sand Men.
False, true.
Cross tick.
Sandman, not real. Sand shifting, not real as well. Both fake.
So we got 1 point for that.
Yep.
Okay.
This is very interesting. Yeah, six.
Head,
Olden Seaman.
That's a false, false.
I got tick cross.
Olden, not a real one. That was just the old seaman gag.
So they're both false.
So they're both false.
Oh, so I got one back on you then.
You got one back,
All right, so you should be one ahead of me now, I think, Matt.
All right, we'll do the math at the end.
Yeah. Seven, Ultimate Pygmies, which is a TV show I'd watch.
True, true.
Cross tick.
Matt McHale takes it again. Oh, yes. Ultimate, not a trait.
It's not.
Pygmies, real. I don't know what their
special trait is.
Okay,
so I still get a point for that.
Just ask the Phantom. Pygmies are real.
So he's got his 2 point lead back again, I think.
Okay, number eight, Seafaring Flames.
Right, this one I'm pretty sure is true, true.
I got tick cross.
True, true. David takes 1 point extra.
I was a bit worried about the
flames.
I knew there was, I remember there being a race that looked like flames.
They're like the elementals from Magic. They'd call them flames in Underground.
I didn't know if you just changed
names. This is tight. You guys are getting different answers. Okay. Second last one. Mm-hmm. Where homunculi?
True, true.
Tick, tick.
Yeah, both correct. Well done. That was a good one. Okay, and I think we may have given this one away a little bit before, but Hordes of White Ladies.
True, true.
Tick, tick.
Yeah, you guys both got it.
Ah, Matt, you've done me. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10.
16.
15. Oh!
Yes!
Oh! Matt McHale takes the sophomore Aaron Graham Ultra Quiz, which is what we're going to call that from now on. AGUQ, number two. Matt McHale takes it 16-15. Tight game. Well played.
Well done,
guys.
All right. Good quiz. Good quiz, Aaron. That's good.
Someone got caught out by the old seaman.
Love the format. Tweets and news.
Neats and twos.
Which we've decided it's got nothing to do with tweets because no one knows how to tweet.
Yeah, no one knows how to use Twitter in Australia. Yeah. So let's.
Anyway, we've got. Well, I think on point one and two of the Seven Land Hand agenda here, it's the same thing.
Seven Land Hand Super Series.
How's that going, Aaron?
Well, we just wrapped up our qualifier number four, which was a sealed deck with a brand new core set, M15.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
Film master Toby Tobias,
Tobias G. Venus.
G. Venus. He's got us coming in a couple of days to do some commentary.
We're going
to
be recording commentary for number four, and if you can't wait for that one, you can watch us ragging on Scouting.
Qualified
number three.
Yeah. Which is, what can we say about the length of that video?
It's short.
Yeah,
I think is what we can say. So that's a quick one to watch while you're eating your breakfast.
If you've got a small bowl of cereal.
Maybe a little.
If you like to share a slice of toast with your significant other.
Yeah, half a slice each. I'm sure you'll be able to rattle out that video.
And get a flavour about what the Super Series are all about.
Yeah.
And you can get yourself down into the Super Series as well, can't you?
Yeah, we've got The next Number one's not till we don't have one in August.
You're kidding me.
No.
What We've happened there?
Too many events. David.
Too many events.
We have
insane. How can you have too many
we
events?
We have too many events to run our own event. We have a weekend full of Grand Prix trials
right.
at Good Games Rockingham and Good Games St. James, where wow. we are based in this large gallery at the moment.
Yeah, the Austin Mangler Gallery.
Yeah. Second week, we've got another set of tournaments. I forget what they are exactly.
Yeah.
Third week, a majority of the players from Perth are flying over for Grand Prix Sydney.
Oh, yeah.
Which is M15 sealed as well.
Yeah.
Last week of August, they're all going to be hungover as shit, and they're right. not going to be ready for tournaments. But Super Series qualifier number 5, first week of September.
Right. Sunday, so is there going to be 2 qualifiers in September?
There's 1 September, October. It worked out exactly so that we got 7 last chance qualifier December in the
finals. Right. So really, I've worked out there that 2 of those weeks... there's going to be no Super Series qualifier just because everyone's going to be shit-faced.
Yeah. Okay. Two weeks.
Right. Well, yeah. You know, sometimes you got a budget for a big hangover.
For being real
yeah. drunk. All right. Any tweets, questions, Facebook comments? Have we got any floating around?
No, just a lot of good feedback from people who have been coming into the store. People really enjoying the magic set rundowns that we've been doing, and also do we save this? Do we reveal this next week when we do our magic? I think we can mention it.
We can mention it today.
We would like to extend the warmest of hands to Mr. Kian De Vries Tennell, who has beaten out thousands of applicants to become our third wheel on the 7-line hand extra magic review.
I worded it as follows. Nobody else wanted him, so we snapped him up.
Yes! For no fee.
Yeah.
Well, minimal to
we
no
can officially
fee.
Write Matt and Kian on the third microphone.
Permanently Matt and Kian.
Yeah.
I've already etched my name under the bottom of this, but yeah, sorry. So there's no resale value on this microphone now. But
Kian will have to find his own way to mark his territory, and we all know how that
wee-wees.
Yes,
but all good comments about the last few Magic ones and our board games reviews. Quite a few people picking up our 2 copies of Ankh-Morpork. As in 2 people buying copies of Ankh-Morpork that we had in store. Based on positive reviews from us in the last episode. We very much enjoyed
it. Well, it's an awesome
game
there, so that's so much fun. They'll be very happy.
And also, I think we sold a lot of M15 this week, and all of that is to do because we talked
about
it.
Oh, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
99% of the sales that we generated in the last week, all because of the podcast.
Yeah, did you hear that, Good Game St. James? Sponsor us more. Buy us something, please.
Yep.
Snacks. Yeah. Ice creams. Small disclaimer.
Yep.
The MI5 joke turned out it wasn't true because the professionals are CI5 and then I immediately thought, oh, I should have done James Bond, when then someone said, no, it's MI6.
That's MI6, yeah.
So
just that's why I assumed MI5 was real. I'm just like, oh, that's the one down from
yeah
MI6.
But you know how cool was the beginning of the last
I very much enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, even if it's totally factually incorrect. No one comes to 7-line hand for facts. I've said that before.
That means you're going to be rehashing that joke next year.
Oh, every year.
Oh,
yeah.
Why?
Yeah, because MI6 will work next year for James
Bond.
MI6?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shh. That never happened. Right. Great. All right, so keep your comments coming in. If we read any of your great questions or your shitty questions, you will receive a Hyper Magic Nerd badge.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, and that's worth treasuring. We're all wearing ours now.
Yep.
It's
quite heavy.
Okay, now this bit is exciting.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah, now I know that the meat axe is going to be all over this.
An axe is actually involved.
The meat axe is, meat axe is going to be all over this. It's your job, listener, to take it away from the meat axe, because he will know how to win this competition. From now until Christmas, we'll be talking a lot of bollocks.
Is Christmas December 25th or the episode that we do around Christmas?
Yeah, it'll be around Christmas. I don't know. I haven't looked at the schedule.
I just want to give it to someone at Christmas.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good, wouldn't it?
And then we can give them the prize from the store.
Wrap it up with a bow.
Yeah. So Christmas episode, from between now and then, we'll be talking an amazing amount of bollocks, but listen closely to such bollocks, because around Christmas time, we'll come up with a question regarding a particular nuance of bollocks from the last 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. So that sounds like a lot of work, doesn't it? But guess what you can win?
Oh my God, what can we win, David?
Whoever can answer correctly will win Storgarrick.
Not 8 foot tall, has
8 foot tall, has his own axe.
Scares my son.
Yeah, you can take that baby home with you.
Oh my God. Someone's going to take home. That,
not only just the Good Game St. James one, but we've got our hands on the one from Rockingham as well.
Are we going to give it to two different people?
Two different people.
Oh my God.
So listen
great.
Closely. We'll ask a question near Christmas. Send in the answers. We'll draw them out of a hat. Tom, completely random, as long as it's the correct answer.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And the two names that come out, we'll probably have to have one hat from Rockingham and one hat from St. James.
Like a beanie from Rockingham and like a top hat from St. James.
Something like that. Yeah, I'd say so.
No personal preference.
We love our,
at
we love our Rockingham
we
friends.
Love our Rockingham friends.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's incentive enough to listen to this shit, isn't it? Just if you can study up, listen to a load of shit between now and Christmas, and win yourself a Storgarak. We'll be back in a fortnight then with Seven Land Hand Extra and in-house expert.
Are we doing it next week?
Oh, no, you'll be doing it next week,
aren't
we?
Next week,
yeah, screw a fortnight. We're coming back next week because for some reason we're doing it back to back.
Oh, that's crazy. Who?
Don't know what happened last week. Sorry.
What does Owl have to do with it?
He just wanted a chance to have a moon landing this week.
Yeah. We weren't here last week when we should have been.
What happened?
We missed our deadline.
No, it's all good.
I can't remember.
There was an X-Wing tournament on last week.
It's very,
that's why. That's there was an X-Wing tournament.
Blame George Lucas.
Yeah, yeah. It was George Lucas' fault. Okay, so just to wrap up then, we'll be back with Kian DVT.
Yeah, he's, resident Seven Land Hand expert. Well, we're joint experts and we'll just argue about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and I'll just prod them to see what happens.
Just prod them until they argue.
And we're going to be looking at M15. Not MI5, not MI6, M15. Not the professionals in CF5. Forget about all that. M15. All right, and all that's left is Aaron's outro.
Thank you very much to Dr. David, as always, David the Dr. David, for hosting, for being
qualifications
generally
cannot
handsome,
be checked up on,
providing the buffet spread at today's Seven Land Hand recording, for keeping the audience quiet the entire time. It's very difficult to film a live podcast with and keeping the audience so deadly quiet out here. And also thank you to Matt McHale for bringing the audience.
Big stick helps.
Yeah, big stick, just hitting people in the road.
If you need a big stick, get it from Garrick.
Micro Matt McHale for coming in today.
That's right. Turns out
it is Sky Marshal Matt McHale, sorry.
Turns out it is a very small world after all.
Doesn't matter about the size as long as it's functional.
Congratulations,
Matt's just banged out another human being.
Yeah. Success.
Speaking of functional.
Well done,
yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Is that the size thing that you're talking about? Something that I was
the
thinking.
Functionality.
What would the rampaging beavers do in Small World? Something to...
What wouldn't
beaver,
they do?
What wouldn't
those,
they do?
Those guys.
So a beaver could eat some wood and the rampaging means that it could just...
He would eat the forest. If there was a forested area,
a forest there,
he would go
it
through and he would
becomes a non-forested
it.
Area.
It would become a field and then the humans could come in and get their bonus.
Oh, yeah, so you get a synergy for having a rampaging beaver and then putting a human inside where the... Inside the rampaging beaver area,
and you get timber tokens that you can throw in the water and clog up the water and all the crashes.
So you're
going to seafaring people be screwed.
So you put your wood where the beaver is.
That's
a good summation of it. I'm just going to draw that on the Small World.
Yeah.
So I'll put my wood in the beaver. I'll write that on the instructions.
Yeah, you got that? Put the wood in the beaver.
Wood in the beaver.
So I think we've got a new Seven Land Hand T-shirt.